I think they like you, Steve.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Good morning, 720 WGN. Justin Kaufman stepping up for Steve Cochran. We'll be back on Friday. The gang's all here, though. Mary Sandberg, Dave Ennett, Steve Grzanich, Mary Vandeville. Good morning to whoever you're doing right now. If you're driving in, going home, starting the day, whatever it might be, just getting into bed with a cup of coffee to listen to the show till 10 o'clock. Then you realize you have nothing else to do for the rest of the day. Whatever your case may be, we got you this morning.
What's that even like?
Well, I
mean, I can't even imagine.
Who has nothing else to do?
I'm trying to cover everybody. Like the idea that maybe they're in bed till 10 o'clock. They listen to the full 4 hours.
Okay, if you can stay in bed till 10 o'clock, are you getting up at 6? That's my question.
Maybe they're an insomniac that really likes their bed.
That could be. I don't sleep well, so on the weekends, but my husband gets angry when I get up in the morning, so I will wake up at around 6:30 in the morning, but I have to lay in bed till 9:30. If I leave the room before 9:30, he gets very upset.
There's a type of person for everybody.
Yep.
Right? I'm just trying to cover all bases,
okay.
Dave.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have doubted.
Dave works 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, so he can't picture having nothing to do. So.
Right. Well, we've got a great show lined up. We're, of course, going to talk about Stan Mikita. What a loss for Chicago. You talk about the Mount Rushmore of Chicago sports, athletes and heroes Stan Mikita has to be on. Obviously, he's already immortalized with the statue in front of the United Center. But Stan Mikita will be a big part of our show today as we'll talk about him here in the 6 o'clock hour. And John McDonough is going to join us from the Blackhawks, the CEO and president, later in the show in the 7 o'clock hour. So we've got a lot. We'll do a lot with Stan Mikita today. And rightfully so. I mean, to say that he's one of the biggest athletes in Chicago history may be an understatement in the way that I don't know. I mean, if you do have a Mount Rushmore of athletes, he's definitely...
He'd have to be on there without question.
And of humans, a Mount Rushmore of humans.
We'll talk about that as well.
Great point.
Yeah. Other news this morning, we will talk, of course, about the Chicago police adding more officers to some of the more violent-plagued neighborhoods of Chicago. This mentioned by the superintendent, and Eddie Johnson. Lori Lightfoot wants to be your next mayor of Chicago, and she's going to join us, talk about what plans she would have to stem the tide of violence in the city of Chicago, and really answer the question, is there anything any mayor can do at this point? And that'll be the question for her coming up in the 7 o'clock hour. Also, Representative Mike Quigley will join us, congressman from the 5th District in the city of Chicago, will be in studio, talk about everything happening in Washington. I want to say Russia.
Well, about Russia in
Washington.
I think he'll have something to say about Stan as well, because he's the biggest Blackhawks fan.
Yeah, and he'll have something to say as well. And we have to talk about... I'm fascinated with this story about Saudi Arabia and Canada. A story where the Canadian government wants Saudis to release some human rights activists that were arrested. Saudi has been... I mean, confrontational, to say the least, about doing so. And the United States has stayed on the sideline. It's a very interesting story because Canada, last time I checked, was a member of NATO, and this falls into that category. But the U.S. is not backing up Canada against a long-time complicated relationship with Saudi Arabia, where they are considered, I wouldn't say an enemy, but they're not an ally, yet we do tons of business with them.
Isn't this usually where we send Bill Clinton?
Right.
He does some brokering, and then he comes back with the people.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we need. We need a Bill Clinton or maybe a Jesse Jackson or someone to do that for us. But really interesting, or whoever the Canadian counterparts is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so we'll talk with Representative Mike Quigley. And Steve Dale's going to be in as we bring in a new... I've never done this segment with you guys. This is the Adopt a Pup segment, right?
Yeah, just follow Dave Bennett's lead.
Or Dave gets on the this floor my fa- and plays with the dog.
This is probably my favorite thing we do on the show, yeah, when we bring the dogs in. But I don't think we've had one in the new studio.
No, I'm very excited about this.
So I think the dog's name is Jade. I caught wind of that. So Dave and Jade will be rolling on the floor together.
Yeah.
Because the idea is the dog comes in, Dave rolls on the floor with the dog, and then we go to break?
Yeah. That- and then people...
well, there's a little more to it than
people
that.
See how cute it is, and they think, I need that dog.
Oh, so. I see.
I think we're like perfect, 100% adoptions.
Yeah. Right. When Dave's went around it.
So right. Dave, so your actions of getting on the floor and rolling around with the dog, 100% adoption rate after
I show the dog's playfulness, and I think it shows that the dog has personality, and so this would be a good member of your family, so just right. keep that in mind.
Well, we got lots to do, news, weather, and traffic, of course, and we got tickets to give away for some Blackhawks and the SNL exhibit remote we've got coming up on Friday. So much to do today in the Steve Cochran Show, so let's get to it.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top 6 at 6, sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
720 WGN, time for the top 6 at 6, and this one is a special top 6 at 6, a top 6 at 6 dedicated to Stan Mikita. I think that's an appropriate thing to do here on this day where Chicago mourns the loss of one of the greatest athletes of all times, one of the most legendary names in Chicago sports, Stan Mikita, passed away yesterday at the age of 78. He died after suffering from a progressive form of dementia, one that robbed him of his memories and his quality of life. The Blackhawks icon played 22 seasons with the team from 1959 to 1980. In that time, he amassed records for points. He's still the all-time leader for the Hawks for games played, and he won a Stanley Cup in 1961. After he retired, he was inducted to the NHL Hall of Fame in 1983 and later was named to the top 100 players of all time. Mikita was known as a tremendous hockey player, but also as an innovator for the game and someone who cared deeply for his Chicago community. You know, in the community, Chicago community cared for him as well, as he's already immortalized with a statue outside the United Center next to his teammate Bobby Hull and, of course, Michael Jordan. And he was also immortalized in the movie Wayne's World as the proprietor of Mikita's Diner. It's great to think about that. And of course, getting a chance to not only be immortalized in such a great comedy, but to play himself and to do comedy. That was the fun part about it.
Stan's Donuts.
Yeah.
I was listening. They were talking about, and Mike Myers, who needed to have Stan Mikita in that movie, wasn't a Blackhawks fan.
No, he's Canadian, right? So yeah. Was he a Toronto guy?
Yeah, and so, but he, whenever Stan Mikita would come and play there, he was so impressed by how this guy played his team that's how he became a Mikita fan. So
isn't that amazing?
His quote was, "I put in 22 years in the National Hockey League, and people remember me from this movie." For owning a donut shop.
I was trying to think of, you know, another career where things change so much over time, you know, 22 years in one sport, and like a kindergarten teacher. When if you've taught for 22 years, how different teaching is the first year the 22nd year. Like, hockey changed
so much.
And he was part of changing it with the helmet and things like that.
I mean, he invented the curved hockey stick, mm-hmm. which is a great story. And like you said, the helmets, he brought them into the modern era. He was also, this is my favorite part about Stan Mikita, he was able to change, to what you were just saying, Mary, he was able to change his game from dirty player, because he started his career where he was kind of, I mean, he was still leading the league in points, but he was the enforcer. He was in the penalty box all the time.
He piled up the penalty minutes.
Yeah.
And he had the scary look.
He did, right.
It's like, yikes.
And he went from, he was able to transition his career from dirty player to a gentleman, and it was evidenced by winning
Lady Bing Trophy for gentlemanly play.
Which is the greatest trophy in all of sports.
And you know you're really good when you're able to do that, because I don't know any athlete that can shift gears like that.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. Like, okay, my daughter said, why are you always in the penalty box? I'm going to switch things
up. That's so good. Dave Bennett, of course, you've covered the Blackhawks. You've covered, I wanted to get a little time in the top 6 at 6 to talk about your reflections of Stan Mikita's passing. You know, as someone who has been covering sports for years here in town, what does Stan Mikita mean?
Well, I remember going into the Blackhawks dressing room at Old Chicago Stadium, and Stan was in the last a couple of years of his career, but he was still such a mainstay and such a force in the dressing room and had so much respect from everyone around him. I mean, here was a guy who everyone knew was going to be in the Hall of Fame and had won a Stanley Cup. And it's not like the Blackhawks had a lot of those guys on those teams in the late 70s and early 80s. But the thing that always struck me about Stan Mikita, and of course, in the last few years, we haven't seen him. But prior to that, when he was became an ambassador and when the Blackhawks came to WGN, he was here all the time because anytime there was any sort of a Blackhawks related event, Stan and Bobby Hull and Tony Esposito, they would come here. But Stan would come here a lot on his own. And he had a certain elegance. Mary, back me up on this. Always had a certain elegance about him, the way he carried himself.
Oh my goodness,
the way
the
he dressed.
And, yeah.
Yes.
Fitted very, suits before they were right. The thing. You know,
lots of turtlenecks, too.
He was a mainstay at every charity golf event. In Chicago, and a lot of the times it would be like a beat the pro deal where he would be on a hole and he would hit shots for your group when you came through because he was a pro golfer.
Well, yeah, because after he retired from hockey, he was the assistant pro at Kemper Lakes for a long time because mm-hmm. that's when hockey players didn't make enough money. They had to have another career. So, I'll just
be a golfer.
I'll be good at hockey.
That's good.
He signed his first contract, I believe, for $8,500 a year with the Blackhawks. Wow. I mean, think about that. But to me, one of his great legacies was the American Hearing Impaired Hockey Association, which he founded as a hockey camp for kids with hearing difficulties in the early 70s, and it exists and has grown, and it's still there to this day.
It's amazing. Mikita was not just known in hockey circles. Statements, stories, and condolences came in from all around the globe yesterday and today. Mary's got those. It's obvious that you're going to get the statements from maybe the mayor of Chicago and maybe the Blackhawks organization, but it goes way beyond that.
Yeah, current players, former players, people outside the sport themselves. Yesterday I heard Mark Giangreco talk about how when Stan, before he even started playing hockey, he was a shy kid, and he watched these kids out in the street playing street hockey, and he thought, well, that would be cool if I could go out there and play, but he was too scared to ask. And then he ended up being, you know, one of the greatest players ever. Also, there's been pictures circulating. Dave Stubbs, who writes for NHL.com, he got them from Glenn Hall in their wedding pictures of when Stan got married. And we've got Mike Ditka, like a 22-year-old Mike Ditka, Glenn Hall, and Bobby Hull. You know, I'll put it on our social
That's
media,
amazing,
the
yeah.
Steve Cochran Show and WGN Radio, because it's like, and so Mike Ditka yesterday was talking about how he was so fun to go out with. Like, these guys rolling around, you know, like, it's just these legends before they were legends doing legendary things that we don't know about,
that's,
you know.
It's amazing to think about Stan Mikita and Mike Ditka on the town.
Well, because in that era, the pro athletes in Chicago, they hung together. I mean, you had Ron Santo and Mike Ditka and Stan Mikita and Bobby Hull and whoever else, Jerry Sloan maybe, I don't know. But those guys would spend time together. I don't think there's anything close to that that goes on these days.
Yeah. Earlier we talked about going from dirty player to gentleman. Stan Mikita told me in a 2011 interview that the reason he made the switch wasn't rules or even strategic. It was because of his daughter.
She started walking up towards our house, and she opened the door. Oh, daddy, daddy. So, and that's what you got, right? And I said, you all right? She said, yeah, I'm fine. I said, you know, I have a question. She said, Mommy let me stay up last night for the first period to watch the game. And you were so good. And I said, well, thank you very much, but you know, what else you got there? She said, well, I couldn't quite understand that when that guy with the stripes on the shirt,
right?
Okay, when he blew the whistle, and all your friends were Uncle Bobby, Uncle Kenny, Uncle Ab, they all went over to sit with their friends. And he told that guy with the stripes, told you to get way across the ring.
You go way
sit
over
in
there.
The penalty box.
That's a great story. And he said that the next time he went into the penalty box, he remembered that story, and that was the impetus for him changing his style of play.
Well, in the minute, I don't know the stats, Dave, but the minutes are dramatic. I know the next year he only had 12 minutes in the penalty box, but prior to that it was like hour or something. It was, it's crazy. It's,
yeah, it, it was, went from triple figures to almost single digits.
And finally, Stan Mikita understood what it meant to be a professional athlete in Chicago. He taught young players that you had to give back to the community. That was the trade-off. And several stories have emerged today and yesterday of the generosity and kindness of Stan Mikita over the years, including the story of Ross McNeil. Ross was diagnosed with a brain tumor at the age of 6. In his battle with brain cancer, Ross was visited in his Wheaton home by Stan Mikita, who would bring current players with, like Marian Hossa. Ross unfortunately died at the age of 11. Mikita, Coach Q, and Hossa went to the wake. But for McNeil and his relationship with the Blackhawks, and Stan Mikita was a special one. It was all special, and it continues to be, as the Blackhawks continue to help with the Ross K. McNeil Foundation, which his mission is to end pediatric brain cancer. On the line with us to talk about Stan Mikita, the man off the ice, Kim McNeil, who's Ross's mom. Kim, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Good morning.
Good morning. So tell us a little bit about Stan Mikita from your vantage point. How are you feeling today?
It's a very sad day to know that we can't see Stan smile again, but the memories and the stories that he gave us, we know are with us always, and so I guess there's a balance between the joy of that and the sorrow of his passing and missing him. He was such a kind and compassionate person. It's funny, when I hear you recant the stories of his career, we know them well, love hockey, certainly he's hockey royalty. The balance between his on-ice, you know, incredible play and his aggressive style early on in his years and what we experienced as family and friends off ice is almost so extreme. It's kind of, you know, kind of crazy to describe that, but that's who he was.
So, Kim, I know you put on the Facebook page yesterday that not only would Stan come, but Jill would come with him. And it's I think, correct to say they became friends with Ross. And that you almost, like, you know, the Hawks are amazing and they send people, you know, like the organization sends, but they were coming on their own and you couldn't even get them out of your house. They, like, wanted to hang out with Ross endless hours just to, because he, well,
you're
Ross
right.
is amazing, but, you know, that's how kind they were.
That's exactly right. Stan and Jill, one of my most fond stories of them was the first time they came and we got the call that they were going to come, and it wasn't at the arrangement of the Blackhawks, who also did so many amazing things and continue to, but Stan and Jill came as Stan and Jill, but in our house, the hockey royalty was coming. So one of my favorite pictures of my little boy is him looking out our front house, front window, waiting for him to pull in the driveway. And the difference between the way that experience was through a little boy's eye and the way it was for Stan when he walked in the house was like night and day. Stan walked in the house as a friend, as a gentle person, as someone who wanted to come meet someone else who he had heard about. And my son Ross was waiting for hockey's finest to walk in. Mm. And the remaining story of that day, I had my kids prepared with some things to be signed, told them, you know, shake your hands, we'll get a picture. We might have 30 minutes, which would be incredibly generous of Stan and Jill. And then we're going to graciously, like, let them go about their day. They don't live close by to us. You know, this is on their own time. And after a couple of hours, and Stan sitting next to my children, telling him hockey stories, he had his sock feet up on a footstool. I found them. My son said, "Well, would you like a snack?" And then Stan, of course, said, "Well, sure." And I'm completely unprepared for that, thinking it was going to be a half hour visit. I think I served something really glamorous, like goldfish, and. He just moved in emotionally and started telling stories and explaining the curve on the hockey stick and just these special things that he was sharing almost in that grandfather sort of spirit. It was unbelievable, not to mention all sorts of other encounters that he shared with our family.
Well, it sounds to me, of course, Stan had a huge impact on your son's life, but he also had an impact on you and your family. And he will be remembered for that.
I think Kim put on Facebook also that Ross is waiting for Stan in heaven with some sticks and pucks and let's go time up there.
There's no doubt.
The Ross K. McNeil Foundation continues in their mission to end pediatric brain cancer in Ross's name, who died at the age of 11. His mom, Kim, on the phone. Kim, thanks so much for remembering Stan Mikita today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
If you want, that foundation website is r33m.org.
That's a tough story.
Yeah, it's I think very appropriate. Yeah. I mean, I think that really tells you who Stan Mikita was.
Yeah, and the text line before we even asked has been flooded with stories of Stan Mikita, and I think that's going to be our text question today. 312-981-7200. Tell us your Stan Mikita story or your thoughts about Stan Mikita's passing, and we'll read them throughout the show. We got much more to come here on the program. That's the Top 6 at 6.
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
The Manafort trial is playing on a loop in Donald Trump's White House, along with coverage of the continued fallout from the president's tweet Sunday in which he appeared to throw his son, Donald Trump Jr., under the bus for meeting with, wait for it, Russians to get dirt on Hillary Clinton. These troubling storylines intersect for the president at a time that he finds himself under ever-increasing pressure to sit for an interview with special counsel Robert Mueller.
Please rise. Court is now in session.
MSNBC, 720 WGN. It's time for the Karen Conti segment. Karen comes on. She's the host of the Karen Conti Show, 7 to 9 here on WGN Radio. And, of course, longtime lawyer in town. We talk about the issues of the day today. The Paul Manafort trial takes center stage. Karen, good to talk to you.
Good morning, Justin.
So this is I'm finally getting around to digging into this trial. It's very interesting about really about money laundering and what seems to amount to fraud. But yesterday was a huge day because Manafort's deputy Gates got on the stand, and the prosecution actually had a good day because they seemed to challenge this witness. Talk about that.
Well, you know, Rick Gates pled guilty, and you know, these are just big, huge numbers. Rick Gates testified that not only did he help Manafort, that basically cooked the books in his company and failed to pay taxes, putting money offshore, but he actually embezzled from Manafort himself. So these were people who are just, you know, these are people in a swamp. You know, yeah. These are people who have all of the advantages of life and have millions of dollars coming in, and they're stealing from each other, stealing from others. They're lying to the federal government. They're buying $15,000 jackets. And none of this money is enough for them. So, again, you know, this isn't the best witness in the world because he's dirty himself. But on the other hand, he's now slipping against Manafort. And essentially, you know, these are things that can be proven by documents, too. These wire transfers are not he said, he said. These are documentation cases where you have proof of where the money was going and how taxes were not being paid.
Is that why you see on all the pundits and the legal analysts that are on television now saying this is a slam dunk, that Manafort is in trouble, and because of the fact that there is a paper trail for all of this stuff?
I do believe that. And listen, when the FBI gets a hold of something and they find these kinds of things, they're not going to just throw people on the stand and have the jurors believe or disbelieve these witnesses, especially when they're pleading guilty to lying. So they're right away, they're to be distrusted, and that's what the defense lawyers do. But right, these are document cases, and the money came from the government of Ukraine. It went to offshore accounts in Cyprus. The money came back to Manafort. He didn't pay taxes on it, and that's pretty much the case.
I'm looking forward to the movie or documentary that is made on this trial after it's finished, because I would like the psychological analysis. A lot of these guys, like you said, they have everything, more money than they can, you know what to do with, yet they need more, or they need the thrill of stealing it, hiding it, putting it here, getting away with something. Like, there's an actual psychological thing going on there that's like a power. They need more power, more everything.
Yeah, and you know, Mary, it's very true, and I have done criminal defense in the past, and a lot of these guys, they like to walk the line. It's almost like a gambling addiction where they go to work every day and they're running afoul of the law and they know it, and you have to think they sort of like it, because you and I think, gosh, if we had all that money, we'd have live a nice life. We probably wouldn't work anymore. We'd probably retire and do nice things for people, and enough would be enough. But for these people, every day they go to work, it's a gamble, and I think there's something about it that's attractive to them.
Karen, is there a chance that Paul Manafort could be acquitted? I mean, we saw yesterday that his defense, he was able to really kind of, you know, take shots at Rick Gates and poke at that credibility. But is there a chance that he comes out of this and is acquitted?
If I'm a betting person here, I say no way. I say he's going to be convicted. I think the prosecution just has the case. They have the documents. They have the witnesses. I mean, you can dirty up a witness. You know, you can say, hey, weren't you having an affair, Rick Gates, which he was, and he was using money from Manafort to fund his affair with a woman and buying a flat in London. So all these people are being dirtied up. But listen, at the end of the day, Manafort chose Gates to be his deputy. So he's the one who chose this dirty guy. So you can dirty him up all you want, but he's Manafort's dirt, if you will.
Yeah. Let's move on to some other stuff. Jason Van Dyke trial. We kind of talked on this last week. The judge said in this case, which is coming, this trial's coming up, that he will decide on whether or not there'll be a change of venue, because that's what the defense in this case is asking for, to get it out of Cook County, or at least out of Chicago. He says he's going to decide at the time of jury selection. How would that work?
Yeah, interesting. He heard about 6 hours of argument, and he heard everyone testify about how this guy can't get a fair trial. And at the end of it, he said, listen, I'm going to get the jurors in here, and I'm going to do my voir dire, which is jury selection. I'm going to ask people to their face, can you give this guy a fair trial? And we're going to decide at that point whether or not. Now, if, you know, 100 people come in and they all say, we've seen the video 100 times, we couldn't possibly acquit him, then the judge said he would then consider having the case moved or having jurors perhaps brought in from some other jurisdiction.
Yeah, it's so interesting, because it seems like that would slow the whole process down. If he does come out with, oh, there's no way this jury pool is tainted, it's just going to push this trial back.
Well, that's true. And then there's the other issue of whether or not Van Dyke is going to opt for a jury trial or a bench trial. That really is a huge decision here. And it is really the common thought that when you're representing a police officer, you want to opt for a bench trial, because perhaps the right judge is a little bit more familiar with how police officers have to make split second decisions. They're a little bit more likely to apply beyond a reasonable doubt. And in a case like this, in an urban area where there's police mistrust and distrust, you know, you might get juries who just don't like police officers. So that's also a very big decision we're going to see.
It's also, and Karen, we've talked about this as well, I mean, when you're talking about the charge of murder on a police officer, you have to, I mean, you really have to prove that there was premeditated, that there was, you know, some thought put into this before it happened in a split-second decision. It's almost like the legal system is not where this should play out, because there's really no way to prove that.
No, it is hard, but you prove it by circumstantial evidence, and those cases get tried and won all the time. You know, you've got a guy who wants to kill his wife because she's cheating, or he wants insurance money. So you put the whole file together showing that he went and looked at the insurance, and he actually got it increased, yeah. And then he went and bought the gun. And of course, you can define, you know, whatever the intent is, and you just get the evidence that is circumstantial. Yeah, I do think it's going to be hard to prove first degree. I mean, could he have made a mistake? Yes, but did he, like, hunt this guy out and kill him in cold blood with premeditation? That's going to be a little bit harder to show.
I don't know. Well, obviously, this is going to be the story for Chicago coming up in the next couple months. The Karen Conti Show can be heard 7 to 9 p.m. on Sundays right here on WGN. And Karen joins us frequently here on the Steve Cochran Show, and she's the greatest. Karen, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
She's so good, right?
She
such
is.
An interesting, both of those cases are really interesting. And we didn't even get to their stuff about Alex Jones, too, being banned from some of the social media platforms. We'll get to that. That story is going to be around for a while as well.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
720 WGN, Justin Kaufman here, stepping up for Steve Cochran, who will be back on Friday for our big SNL exhibit. remote. We're doing a show live from the SNL exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications coming up on Friday.
You can win tickets all morning.
Yeah, we'll give away some of those tickets. I wanted to read some of the texts that were coming in for Stan Mikita. They're really great. These stories, 312-981-7200. 317 said, my grandfather got to know Stan at Art's Tavern in Hillside, where many of the 60s Hawks would go. Met him at the 2013 Hawks convention, shared the best 15 minutes of the weekend with him. It's great. Stan Mikita lived next door to my cousins in St. Catharines, Ontario. Played street hockey with them. A lot of texts coming in saying my late father golfed with him. My people golf with him at different places around. This is my favorite one so far. 630, back in the late 70s, used to have a Kodak picture day, and you get your signatures of all the players. And you can go out on the ice and get them to sign your picture. Stan Mikita would take time and actually talk to each person as he was signing their picture, not just a quick signature. And I will always remember that. 312-981-7200 is if you have stories of Stan Mikita, as we're honoring him today as well. We have a pair of tickets to give away to the Blackhawks preseason home game. Single game preseason tickets are on sale now. Buy your tickets to ChicagoBlackhawks.com to see the Hawks face the Red Wings, the Senators, and the Blue Jackets next month. ChicagoBlackhawks.com. Why don't we do, you know, good old number 21, divide that by three, you know, do some quick math. Seventh caller is going to get those tickets.
Okay, why'd you divide it? You lost me there.
I just divided it because 21, that's a lot. It's just like,
that's a lot.
I feel bad for Super Joe. He's got to answer a lot. So we'll do the seventh caller, 312-981-7200. All right, coming up, Lori Lightfoot's going to join us. She's running for Chicago mayor. Talk to her about her ideas for stemming the violence. And also a little bit later, John McDonough, president and CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks, is going to join us. This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio,
it's the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Stepping up for Steve today, Justin Kaufman, 720 WGN. John McDonough, CEO and president of Chicago Blackhawks, joining us a little bit later in the hour to talk about Stan Mikita. And coming up in the 8 o'clock hour, Congressman Mike Quigley in studio to talk about the Paul Manafort trial, what we need to, why it matters. And then also we could talk about some other things, including Canada and Saudi Arabia. And then in the 9 o'clock hour, Ro Khan's going to join us, as well as Steve Dale, who's going to bring in a dog for adoption.
Yeah, a dog named Jade for Dave to play with.
There we go.
Thank you.
Speaking of Ro Khan, we want to continue the conversation that happened in the Ro Khan show with Anna DeVlantes a couple days ago with mayoral candidate Lori Lightfoot. Of course, this weekend, Chicago was rocked with the numbers of people who were shot. I think the final total was 66, something like that. And of course, today, the news that the superintendent is going to expand the police ranks and put more officers down in some of the areas that are affected by violence. Lori Lightfoot joins us on the line now. Ms. Lightfoot, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure.
So as a former head of the Chicago Police Board and also the chair of the Police Accountability Task Force, your thoughts on what happened this past weekend and what you would do as mayor to change it?
Well, look, first, let's just say I think people all across Chicago have a heavy heart from what happened this weekend. It was a devastating and I think very difficult set of circumstances. We found so many people shot, and a lot of them were shot participating in outdoor neighborhood parties. That's a tragic set of circumstances. But look, I'll say the same thing that I've been saying for quite some time now. We have to get at the root causes of this violence, and a lot of that is disinvestment in these neighborhoods, really no beacons of hope from jobs, good schools, a social safety net that allows access to good medical care for all, and on and on and on. These are neighborhoods that are crying out for investment. And unfortunately, the thing that remains is the illegal economy. And we know where the illegal economy thrives, violence is going to be very, very prevalent. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
I was going to say, as someone who, as at the Chicago Police Board and also with the task mm-hmm. force, the idea of putting more officers on the streets to patrol on the surface is a good thing. Do you agree with the move by the mayor to the police superintendent to bring more police officers to these neighborhoods in the coming weeks?
Well, look, I think the challenge of that, and of course, if we need more officers on the street, we should have had them there last weekend, right? The challenge is, we have a finite number of officers. Where are those extra officers coming from? And, you know, while the mayor denied that officers that could have been in the neighborhoods were actually policing Lollapalooza, it makes one wonder. And when you take officers, that many officers, and move them to the south and the west side neighborhoods that are most crime plague, where are they coming from? Because what I'm also hearing from people on the north side is we don't have enough officers in our neighborhoods. And frankly, a lot of well-off north side neighborhoods are resorting to paying for private security forces. This is a result in part of the mayor, frankly, waiting way too long to staff up the number of policing resources that we have in the city that have not kept pace with the number of officers that have been retiring. But ultimately, yes, of course, we need to make sure that there's a viable police presence in these neighborhoods. These neighborhoods that are most crime-plagued deserve to have high-quality policing services, a police force that views them with respect and isn't just viewed as an acting like an invading force. But long-term, it's not a viable solution because we're robbing Peter to pay Paul by taking resources out of other neighborhoods on the north side and putting them into the south side. We've got to have a real staffing plan to make sure that we have adequate resources everywhere across the city.
Well, obviously, this, as you mentioned, heavy hearts for Chicagoans. The New York Times, I think it was on Tuesday, went with the headline and made it a national story talking about shot in Chicago, zero arrests. Why is that? I mean, as for citizens who aren't that familiar with how crimes are processed and how the fight against violence is happening on the streets of Chicago, how is it that we have zero arrests from this weekend's violence?
Honestly, I have no idea how we have zero arrests. I was at an event last night with Kim Fox, and she raised exactly the same question. It seems inconceivable to me, with that many shootings, that many deaths, that there are zero arrests. I raise the question of whether or not we have enough cameras in these crime-plagued neighborhoods to make sure that we're recording real-time what's going on. Many of these parties were advertised on Facebook. They were trending on Facebook. So why is it that we didn't have enough officers on the beat around these parties to make sure that people were safe? There's a lot of questions that I think have to be answered and haven't been answered yet by the mayor. But fundamentally, it makes no sense that we have all this violence and yet we have no arrest. Now, look, obviously the people in the communities have a role to play. But what I hear from people all over the city is they are afraid. They are afraid that if they come forward, particularly given the abysmal homicide clearance rate of 17% that we had in 2017, that if they come forward and they put themselves out there, they're putting themselves at unnecessary risk because police officers are not keeping their information confidential and then keeping them safe. No one, I don't care what neighborhood you live in, is going to come forward to report a crime if they feel like they're going to be put at more risk. So the police department obviously has to continue the hard work, and that has got to include the detective division as well, not just the parole division, to build goodwill in those neighborhoods every single day so that when a crisis hits and there's a need for neighborhood cooperation, that they're not starting from ground zero.
So, Lori, I know you've been a longtime advocate for reform and by sitting on all these different boards. Did you have to be talked into running for mayor, or did you feel like that was your idea? It's a big thing to tackle, given all of the issues the city has.
Well, I came to this after a long period of seeing, frankly, inaction on big issues that I think need to be addressed. I mean, if we look at these neighborhoods that are most crime-plagued, they're also the most economically distressed. They routinely have unemployment that's 25%, and of course that doesn't include the people that have just stopped looking for it because there are no jobs. We have way too many kids across the city. 40% of African-American children in the city live in poverty. I mean, that is a devastating number. And we go into these neighborhoods, and it looks like a different world. Not just a different city, but a different world. When I recognize those issues, that neighborhoods are crying out for resources and investment and being made a priority by city government and, frankly, other private interest, and yet there's no comprehensive plan to uplift the quality of life in these neighborhoods. That's what drew me into this race. Yeah. We have got to come to a reckoning in the city. The haves and the have-not, that gulf is growing by the day, and we see it manifested in things like what happened this weekend. And we've got to have a mayor who, frankly, sees everyone in Chicago, sees these needs, and is willing to roll up their sleeves and get the job done, and not just be silent because it's not politically expedient to wade into these very difficult issues.
Lori Lightfoot is running for the mayor of Chicago, former president of Chicago Police Board, and also chair of the task force, the Police Accountability Task Force. Ms. Lightfoot, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Have a good day, everyone.
There you go. That's interesting. And, you know, obviously an issue, Chicago violence, that is not new. It is not an issue that is one that is just expedient for the moment. This has been something that has been decade after decade after decade. So it almost is a little bit hard to fathom how any mayoral candidate or a person who would be in that chair could affect change. But that might just be systemic and where we're at right now.
Yeah, and somebody has to start it.
Right.
But it'll take... Even if this, you know, if Ms. Lightfoot is the one who ends up being, you know, our next mayor and she puts forth the starts the changes, it's going to take years for it to be, you know, the actual ship to turn around. So.
Well, we'll continue the conversation here on WGN as we roll up to the municipal election in February. All right. Coming up, John McDonough is going to join us. And we also have our most valuable person on the planet.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Justin Kaufman stepping up for Steve today, who will be back on Friday for our SNL exhibit remote. It's going to be fun.
You should give away some tickets to that right now.
You know what? Yeah, let's do that. 312-981-7200. This is really cool. Join us for a live broadcast from the Museum of Broadcast Communications at the Saturday Night Live, the Experience exhibit. It's this Friday, August 10th, from 6 to 10 a.m. You get an inside look at the making of SNL, over 500 artifacts, like the couch from Wayne's World. It'd be a perfect with Stan Mikita. You'll see the couch from Wayne's World that started it all. But yeah, you get the tour. You get to come watch us do the show. We're going to have some great guests. And then you get the tour afterwards, which is a private tour. If you haven't seen the exhibit, it's amazing. 312-981-7200. Let's do a seventh caller, Joe. What do you think? Give away some tickets to the SNL exhibit.
And the tour ends in December, so you got to go the next few months.
And last I heard, we're going to get Dan Aykroyd's going to call in, which is awesome, from L.A. How cool is that?
I am.
All I want to do, and I know that, you know, we'll have a lot to talk to him about SNL, but all I want to do is talk about his days at Second City in Chicago, where there's all of these myths and stories of a bar that he had set up with Belushi across the street on Wells Street. And it was part of the old town Second City tour. And I just want to ask, that's all I want to ask him about. It's just if we could just spend 10 minutes with Dan Aykroyd talking about Old Town in the 60s.
Dave, did you used to hang out with them at that bar?
No, I used to live right up the street.
Did you know that was happening?
No, I mean, I've heard since, and I kind of wished I'd known that was all going on.
Well, they would do the Second City show, and it gets out late after the improv set, 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, and the bars wouldn't stay open late enough. So these guys made makeshift bar across, I guess it was across the street down the alley, and it was a very speakeasy kind of, you had to have a password to get in. And these guys would drink until 5, 6 o'clock in the morning. I mean, obviously, that's not great. Obviously, in the story of John Belushi and what happened to him,
lifestyle-wise.
Yeah. But tremendous time, you know, sort of hippie culture, late 60s, early 70s. This is right before they all went on to be famous at SNL.
That was way before I lived anywhere close to them.
I think Dave's also excited to ask him about his skull vodka.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you ask about the vodka, too.
He has his own vodka, Dave.
I've seen the commercials.
Okay.
Yeah, there we go. All right, it's time for the most valuable person on the planet for Wednesday, August 8th, 2018. Today, we're going to give it to the International Fund for Animal Welfare for creating International Cat Day. That's right. Today is International Cat Day. It was founded in 2002. It's an event celebrated worldwide. A fun way for people to celebrate their bond with cats and advocate for their welfare. I didn't know it was International Cat Day. I'm excited about it. I have two cats at home.
Oh, I didn't know you had two.
I sometimes I don't know either because the one cat won't come out. This is always under the bed. Comes out at feeding time, and then I go to pet, and it freaks out, and it runs away.
Your one cat has a different name.
Minetta is the girl cat, and she's the one that's like, hey, what's up? Having fun? You want to pet me? Cool. And then there's Mittens, who's like, I got to get out of here. That's their. I just did their personalities. And
really? Do they actually speak?
They don't speak, but if they did, that's what
that's
they're
how they would sound.
He's looking at me. I better run away. Run under the bed as fast as I can. An estimated that International Cat Day is a full 24 hours of recognition for one of humanity's oldest and most beloved pets. The festivities were put together for the first time in 2002 by the International Fund for Animal Welfare to celebrate the pet. An estimated 500 million cats are thought to be frolicking in neighbors' gardens across the world, and that's great because owning a cat has shown to improve mental health and relieve stress, anxiety, and depression if they let you pet them. Otherwise, it's just a lot of anxiety and stress about having to buy cat food.
Cats cause me anxiety.
Are you allergic, Mare?
I say I am, just so I don't have to be bothered.
I have to say, I was not much of a pet person at all, and it's only been a year since I've had the two cats. But yeah, I think that is absolutely true. They are stress relievers and anxiety relievers. They're so fun. And the one cat I have, Minetta, which we rescued, is like a dog. Follows you up the stairs, hangs out, begs for food, tries to take stuff off your plate.
My parents had a cat named Killian who passed away a year and a half ago. She was 18, and so she was our third sister. She didn't like... She liked my parents. She tolerated me. She did not like my sister. She bit her ear one time. Killian bit Katie's ear.
Ooh.
Like Mike Tyson.
She knew Katie was a dog person.
I know. Right? I think we really...
Cats know that.
They do.
They know when I'm around, I tell you.
Yeah.
They come
here.
Right to my lap, and I'm like, no!
That is true. They also can seek out the person who's allergic.
Oh, yeah.
They're like, oh, you don't want me on your lap? Well...
Here I come.
What's 18 in, like... Human, I mean,
in pet years,
because I know in dog years it's seven,
yeah,
right. But what is it in cat years?
And cats have nine lives, so
yeah. All right.
Yeah, so. That's a good point.
a lot of math this morning.
Figure it out.
Well, the most valuable person on the planet for Wednesday, August 8th, is the International Fund for Animal Welfare for creating International Cat Day, which is today, August 8th. So celebrate your cat. All right, we'll come back, John McDonough. And the news here on 720 WGN. Stay with us.
They wanted me to walk in this way, and Mike Myers or Garth.
Yeah,
it was Garth.
Yeah, Wayne
walking
Garth.
In this way, and I've got a newspaper in my hand, so I started walking away, and I do this, and all of a sudden my shoulder goes back, and it's Mike Myers. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
Mr. Makita. And on the spurm of the moment, how do you think I respond?
Let me guess. You said it's Stan. Yeah.
And Mr. was my father.
This is Stan Makita's donuts. Excellent munchables.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
720 WGN. We're honoring the life and legacy and the impact of Stan Makita, who died yesterday at the age of 78. A sad day for Chicago sports fans, but also for the city of Chicago, as arguably Stan Makita, not even arguably, I mean, he is on the Mount Rushmore of sports athletes.
They don't put a statue outside the United Center just to anybody.
While he's alive, too.
Yes.
I mean, it's amazing to think.
Great point, yep.
And to know that how important those statues at the United Center are. I mean, obviously, Michael Jordan, that's a tourist destination worldwide to come there. To have Stan Makita just around the bend there is amazing. And to greet all of the Blackhawks fans as they enter the United Center, it's a huge, huge honor. Joining us on the line now, CEO and President of Chicago Blackhawks, John McDonough. John, thanks for joining us today to talk about Stan Makita. We appreciate it.
Oh, you're very welcome. Thank you.
So let's start. I mean, your reaction to this. Obviously, we knew that that Stan was sick, but, you know, first, your reactions and the legacy of Stan Makita.
Well, profound sadness, I think, would be the best way to describe it. We knew this was imminent, and he had been sick for quite a while. But I think that, you know, the shock when you first hear it, you know, because of the impact that he's had, as you mentioned, on the city, the impact that he's had on the franchise. You know, Stan had a very, very unique common touch, very self-deprecating, and was just a pleasant guy to have around, and what a great guy to bring back to the franchise.
John, good morning. When was the last time that you saw Stan?
I went and visited him about 2 years ago, and was with Jill as well, and it was just good to see him. He looked the same. He looked great. And you know, when I left, it was just he was in a good place, but his memory was gone, and it was kind of sad to see. But it was very dignified. He was in a place where they gave him tremendous care. But it, you know, you were so accustomed to see this vibrant, exhilarating Sam Nikita, and but it was a very, very good memory, and we've kept in touch with you know, with the family during this illness.
So, John, you and Rocky were the ones who decided to bring back these rocks of the franchise back in 2008. How much of that was smart business decision, and then John McDonough, the fan, loving Bobby Hull, Stan Mikita, you know, that, like, personally, this had to be exciting as a kid growing up watching Blackhawk hockey.
Well, it's a conversation, Mary, that Rocky and I had early on. You know, Rocky being part of the ownership family, you know, going to many games. I spent many nights at Chicago Stadium, you know, listening to Harvey Wittenberg on the public address, and then listening to Lloyd Pettit on television. And, you know, Stan Mikita became a part of, you know, our youth. I think yesterday we all lost a part of our youth. And, you know, we made the decision to bring back, our first call we made was to Bobby, and those negotiations were not easy at all. They were a bit of a struggle, but it was fun. You know, Bobby was not really interested in coming back, but once we reached an agreement, I mentioned that I was going to call Stan. Well, Bobby had reached Stan before I did, and I remember Stan saying and telling him what our agreement was going to be. Generally, when you sign somebody to a multi-year contract, whether it's a player or an ambassador, they're thrilled to get it. I remember sitting with Stan. He was in my office, and Stan said, "Are you sure you want to do this?" So he felt disenfranchised. He felt as if he was unplugged from the team, and he was surprised that we were inviting him back. But we had to, not just with Stan, but with Bobby and with Pony. We had to build that bridge between the past and the present if we were going to try to explain the direction that we were going.
You know, one thing that as you look at today's players versus players of that generation, and guys, we were talking earlier, John, about guys like Stan and Bobby and Mike Ditka and Ron Santo, who were all playing in Chicago at the same time and were friends and hung out together. It was a different time, and a lot of times today's players don't really know the legacy. They don't know the history. They don't know about those guys. But I've always sensed with your players, especially Taves and Kane, who were always around Stan Mikita throughout their careers, that they had a great appreciation of what Stan and Bobby and the other ambassadors meant to the franchise. Do you have that same sense?
Yeah, I do. I think, and they probably recognize that there's a very good chance that they're going to be part of our franchise, and I think this is going to perpetuate. I think it's very, very important. History is very, very important. Legacy is very, very important. And Dave, I think you're right. When I was younger, I know you grew up in the D.C. area, correct?
Yes, yes.
When I was younger, growing up on the northwest side, Medicine Park, our sports teams were pretty much defined by superstars as opposed to championships. You know, you had Stan and Bobby, that was a brand. And then you had Billy and Ernie and Ronnie, and that was a brand. And then you had, for the White Sox, it was Aparicio and Fox, and then for the Bears it was Sayers, Butkus, and Ditka. And it was just, they were part of, you know, you saw them after retirement, they participated in things throughout the Chicago area, but these are great memories that you have. The Bears won a championship in 63, the Sox went to the World Series in 59, the Blackhawks won a championship in 61, but I believe, Dave, that Mike Ditka was in Stan Mikita's wedding. Yep. And it's these guys got along. They went to a place near Wrigley Field called The Cottage. I've heard hundreds of stories about what went on at The Cottage.
Oh, yeah.
And it was they were just great, great memories, and they love sharing them.
John, you said at the beginning of this interview that, you know, as part of our youth with Stan Mikita. For those coming up now, and of course the Blackhawks have a tremendous fan base of kids that are the teenagers and also young adults who may not know the legacy of Stan Mikita. What do you say to them? What do you say to a Blackhawks fan who may be 21 years old about Stan?
I would say you can be a superstar, and you can also demonstrate humility and kindness and respect. And that's what Stan did. I think anybody that speaks to him, Justin, or anybody that encountered him, whether it was on a golf course or I knew Stan many years before I came to the Blackhawks because he would come through Wrigley Field. But, you know, I think he was a gentleman's gentleman, and he was very, very easy. And really the self-deprecating part, I don't think Stan really realized the specter of who he was. He didn't want to believe it. But I think humility is important. I think people have a tendency to gravitate towards humility, especially with a superstar like that. But he had such a decorated, distinguished career that you would love to see every professional athlete comport themselves like Stan Mikita. Yeah.
You honored Stan with one last shift last April, and it was a great night with his three grandsons out on the ice. Yeah. Really, really cool moment. Have you thought about what you'll do next season, John?
It's pretty new, Dave, right now. You know, we talked a little bit about it yesterday, and probably will be announced sometime in the near future, but certainly there will be a significant recognition. You know, his banner hangs in the rafters. We have a statue outside of the United Center the same night we unveiled the statue of Bobby Hull. But certainly it will certainly be recognized during the course of the season.
You know, John, I think Stan is a good reflection of hockey itself. All the other sports, Major League Baseball, the NBA, they may be families within themselves, but it isn't the thing they put forward first. But hockey, I know you worked in both sports, so you know, but hockey, like from growing up young to being, you know, adults, whether you're in the NHL or you just played a few years, it's a family. Once you're in that family, you're a part of it. And it's like that makes that sport special. I think that's why hockey is such a cool fraternity to be a part of.
I would agree with that, Mary. I think that hockey players are special. You know, I've had the good fortune of dealing with players with the Cubs. I think they're special as well. I think baseball players, hockey players, they're very, very unique. I think hockey players get it. They get the big picture. They get the mission. They're not the NFL. They're not the NBA. There's a long way to go. There's great respect for authority. And they understand the media. They understand people. I think that there's, because of the path that they're on to get to the NHL, what a long shot it is, because it's an international sport. You know, we've got players that are from Slovakia and from Russia and from Canada and from the United States and from Finland and Sweden, and they know how long the odds are. So when they get here, there's a great sense of appreciation that they're here and they want to stay here. You know, and one of the similarities, and I was thinking about this over the last 20 hours or so, there are a lot of similarities that Marian Hossa has that Stan Mikita had. Very, very similar.
John McDonough, President and CEO of the Chicago Blackhawks, remembering the legacy and impact of superstar Stan Mikita, who died yesterday at the age of 78. John, thanks so much for taking some time out this morning. We appreciate it.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
There you go. It's a sad day for Chicago to talk with Stan Mikita, to think about him being, as we just said, on the Mount Rushmore of Chicago athletes, and for so many generations, as John so eloquently said, it feels like a part of our youth died.
I'm really glad that John mentioned the self-deprecating part, because if you listen to some of the audio clips and watch the videos that are posted right now at WGNradio.com, different interviews with Stan over the years on the station, you get a sense of that he was always ready to kind of turn the joke on himself and didn't comport himself necessarily as a guy who everyone around him is awed by his presence and by the fact he's a Hall of Famer, and he was like one of the guys.
And you're right, the Makita night at the Hawks game last year was
one
great.
Last shift.
Yeah, so great.
That was awesome.
My husband said his ego didn't match what his actual impact is. You know,
exactly.
No ego.
That's rare in sports, especially at the superstar level. All right, coming up, Dean Richards going to join us in the 8 o'clock hour, as well as Representative Mike Quigley, representing the 5th in Chicago, who'll be in studio. But
this is 720 WGN Chicago.
708 says, with the thrilling game calls with Lloyd Pettit coming over the transistor radio tucked under my pillow, I was in awe of just how great a player Stan Mikita was. It was because, along with his genuineness and kindness to others throughout his life, that I always cherish that memory. Also, 847 says, Stan Mikita came to my school, Oak School in Niles. It was probably 1972, 1973. I have a signed postcard for him that day. He was really nice with all the kids, and I'll never forget. So, I mean, the stories continue to pour in. We'll continue to get you those stories, of course, throughout the day.
You know why? He was an approachable superstar, and never shied away from fans. The United Center at Chicago Stadium, you'd go up to him, he engaged, and we need those people.
Eddie Olczyk said yesterday that he, as a 13-year-old kid, was at the Chicago Stadium in the bathroom, and that he ran into Stan Mikita, of all people, because he was hurt and not playing, and he was like the coolest interaction he's ever had, you know, talking to a kid, and you know, 13-year-old kid in the bathroom.
That's amazing. Yeah, so. And so much more. I can't wait for the Blackhawks to make the announcement on what they're going to do about Stan's passing with the upcoming season. So, as John just said, that announcement will be forthcoming. All right, coming up, Dean Richards. Stay with us.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more.
Steve Cochran Show, stepping up for Steve today, Justin Kaufman, Mary Sandberg is here, Dave Ennett, Steve Grzanich, Mary Vandeveld, and of course Dean Richards, who joins us for Moron Entertainment, but I'll just call it entertainment today, how about that? Since
you could be a moron.
I could be an honorary moron?
You could be a moron if you want. It's not hard, clearly.
You should buy Dean's tapes. He's selling a VHS, How to Be a Moron.
You too can you be too. A moron.
Morons for Dummies.
Got a whole book series coming out. I hear cassettes are really popular now with the kids.
Right.
We'll have a whole cassette series that you can listen to on your Walkman.
Yeah.
Is that what the little... I'm trying to remember now.
Yeah.
Was the Walkman...
The CD.
I know it was radio, but it was... Wasn't it that you could pop a cassette in? Also, I can't remember now.
Yeah. It was Walkman,
the Walkman,
right?
Yeah.
Sony Walkman.
Yeah, and then they had a Discman once you could put a
Disc
CD in
man,
it.
Discman, right.
And that was
which
cooler.
Was the worst because... And one time I had the Discman in my coat pocket, and I took the L, and I got stopped by the police because they thought I was packing.
Oh.
Well, because the circle was harder to put in a pocket.
I think it was because if you are a fan of the Discman, you remember that it was very, if you bumped it at all, it would skip and move around.
Right.
So I was holding it against my jacket, looking like I was like a 80s gunman with a newsie underneath.
Yeah. Right. A gunman, an 80s gunman with a mullet.
Exactly. Like I was casing the joint.
That's why I always carry it. Still to this day, if you see me out on the street enjoying music, it's with a giant boom box.
You keep it on the shoulder.
No one's confused.
I was on the street the other day on Chicago Avenue, and a bunch of kids came by, and there was a ton of music. And I was like, where's the boom box? It was one of the little speakers that the kid had in his hand.
Oh, that's great. Yeah, that's ridiculous.
I was like, this is, you lose the effect. I told him. I said,
that's
you need
ridiculous.
The big boom box.
I'm always amazed, if you're at some place and music sounds fantastic at a party or something, and it winds up being a little Bluetooth speaker the size of a pack of cigarettes.
Yep.
It's tiny and sounds so great.
It also, it just ruins the aesthetic. I mean, I want to see that kid with the big boombox on his shoulder.
That's what I enjoy.
Yeah.
I enjoy having the gigantic speakers in my house.
Yes, right.
Well.
Right, the Memorex.
That can't blend in with anything.
That don't blend.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, speaking of music.
I took such pride in my speakers.
You're a speaker guy.
My tuner.
Right.
And my speakers and my turntable.
Right.
Well, it did used to be a showcase. It, when you got a new one and put some money into it, and people would say, me? Oh, is this the new setup? Ooh, you know, like now it's in the walls. They're tiny. No one even knows where it's coming from.
Right. And remember hauling that thing to college? All three parts of it with the speakers. Right? And, my God.
Oh, you had to, though.
Yeah. That's a real dope
total,
receiver.
Total status symbol.
Yeah, right.
of what a dork you are.
Speaking of music, a song, a pop hit, is being turned into a TV show. Explain.
Well, do you want to hear?
Yeah.
Let's hear which one I'm talking about.
Hey there, Delilah, what's it like in New York City? I'm 1,000 miles away, but girl, tonight you look so pretty. Yes, you do.
Do we like this song? I like this song.
Yeah, I love it.
Chicago band, right?
I've always liked these guys from Lombard,
Plain White Tees.
Plain White Tees,
Seen them before.
Are great. They turn out such great music. And this song, Hey There, Delilah, is being adapted into a television series. It's going to be a romantic comedy about a long-distance relationship.
Smart. So they're just taking the plot of the song.
Plot line of the song.
Turning it into a rom-com.
Struggling musician and a long-distance relationship in New York City. Tom Higginson, who's the lead vocalist for the band, has been on with us many times. Great guy. Said that people constantly ask about this song all these years later, 12 years later, and they really connect with it. So they're adapting it. They're writing scripts.
Oh.
They're going to pitch it to networks and cable studios and all that.
If they need a theme song, maybe they can call me. I'll do a theme song because I can't think what the theme song would be for that show. Yeah,
I would. That eludes me for anything. What rhymes with Delilah?
What would be a good theme song?
So, Dean, you know, Pete Zimmerman and I used to work on the Steve Dahl Show, and I believe it's Tom Higgins' dad was a fan of the Dahl Show, and the kids grew up, you know, playing in his garage.
Sure.
And so he made them come on our show and play a song.
Nice.
Even though the kids weren't really all that interested in being there. And Pete Zimmerman was the technical producer at the time, and they played the song, and one of them had a bad microphone. And so it's one of his like tragic things. And so they did a do-over, but you know, when they sang it twice for us, even without then one with a good mic. But
was Pete throwing stuff around?
Oh,
did
it was
get all violent.
Pete, I think it's still to this day.
More cowbell.
And I do know that he never ended up with Delilah. I do know that.
Don't spoil the story.
Sorry.
Don't spoil the
in real life. In real life,
if it's a TV series, you know they're never going to get together.
Yeah, that's right.
There'll be a spinoff. Delilah will get her own show.
That's right. They're gonna milk
syndicated
it.
Syndicated radio show.
Dean Richards.
Oh wait,
of course.
That art's already happened.
He joins us every day here at 8 o'clock. Let's take a quick break, and we'll come back with Dean and talk about Angelina Jolie and Brad Pitt. More disputes there. Meghan Markle, House of Cards. It's Batwoman actress, much more to talk about. Let's get an update on the news.
Is my mic on? Oops, sorry.
It's still on.
We'll be calling his name.
Dean Richards, the entertainment editor, Channel 9 and 720.
Dean Richards on the line with us from our, I guess it's a sister station or satellite office up at the WGN TV studios.
We like to call it the mothership.
The mothership. That's where we're the satellite over here.
When I'm there, I like to call that the mothership.
Wherever you're at is the mothership. I love it.
That goes with the big real estate deal that I've got for you.
Oh, that's coming up. All right.
Mothership plays prominently in that.
Hey, Dean, I just, a texter from the 815 said Delilah did attend the Grammys with him, and that was their only date. So there was a date.
Oh, so they didn't have a date.
A date. No follow-up.
There you go.
So.
Oh, Delilah. What's it like in New York City?
You're 1,000 miles from nowhere, but tonight you look so pretty.
That's 6 episodes. It's right there.
Oh,
what's it like in New York City?
What you do to me?
And then what it does to him, that's another 6 episodes. You can do season after season of this stuff.
I'm looking for a cameo on this.
That's right.
Tom, if you're listening, we all want cameos on the show.
Angelina Jolie, Brad Pitt, they're disputing.
Oh.
Is this a divorce dispute? Where are they at in this?
This is crazy McCrazington is what this is. It's been 2 years since they split up. And they still don't have a finalized divorce on this yet. A lot of details, I get that. But Angelina Jolie yesterday filed some court documents claiming that Brad Pitt has not been paying what she calls meaningful child support. There is only an informal agreement about child support. People who are close to Brad Pitt say that he has already paid out millions of dollars over the past couple of years in support, much more than they agreed upon in this informal agreement. But Angelina Jolie filed the documents about the whole thing. In the meantime, Angelina Jolie's lawyer has quit the case because she says it's very difficult to represent her because she keeps launching the smear campaign against Brad Pitt. And, you know, to get things done in court, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
So it's extremely complicated. They have six children. Nowhere near a finalized divorce, so this is unfortunately going to go on for a very long time.
Yeah, that sounds. I mean, obviously, in the tabloids and the paparazzi, they love this stuff. This is going to be every court document that's filed becomes a huge story.
I guess it makes me so sad. I mean, some of the kids are teenagers. Not that that makes it much easier when a divorce takes place, but most of the kids are young, and you know, having this dragged out, especially in the press. You know, especially in this extremely non-amicable way, cannot be good for any of these children.
Yeah. And it's interesting when you hear about money issue support when you know both parties have ample funds. Money, yeah. So,
yeah, I don't know the specifics of that, but it seems to me that there's going to be question to whether or not enough has been paid.
Yeah.
Meghan Markle turns down an Emmy. Invitation, not the Emmy.
Invitation to the Emmy Awards, yeah.
She's like, here's your Emmy. Oh, I can't take this Emmy.
Nomination. That's on the next page. Oops, sorry. Yeah, she got an invitation to attend. She and Prince Harry, you and your royal husband are invited to the Emmy Awards that will be taking place in September. She politely has turned down the invitation. She's made very clear she wants to leave acting and showbiz behind now that she is you know, part of the royal family. The USA Network was trying to get her to go by submitting her as outstanding supporting actress for her role on the show Suits. She was not nominated, so that's not part of this equation. But they still, I guess, nice. They extended an invitation to her, yeah. Nonetheless.
They just want the ratings on it, right?
You never know. You get a Meghan Markle and Prince Harry sitting next to Ray Romano. The Emmys.
I think it's a good, you know, she said she was leaving that world, and by not accepting, it's like she's not on the fence. It. She meant it. Yeah, like Grace Kelly, you know.
Yeah, she means it. Good for her.
House of Cards, final season debut coming up here.
November 6th is when this will be debuting on the Netflix platform. Actually, November 2nd. It's just a few days before the election, and very interestingly. But this will be the final season of House of Cards. This will be the Kevin Spacey-less season of House of Cards following numerous allegations of sexual assault by Spacey. So they, you know, they shut the show down for a little while. They went on an extended break to reorganize. And, you know, spoiler alert, I think everyone's heard that Robin Wright is going to be the president of the United States when the show comes back. But I love the in the trailer, in the posters, the slogan for the show this time is a hashtag My Turn, which I sort of love.
Not bad.
Sort of love that.
Yeah. Batwoman, we talked a little bit about Batwoman, but an actress has been chosen.
They have chosen the actress from Orange is the New Black named Ruby Rose. She will become the first gay lead character of a live-action superhero series. It's going to be on the CW network in a crossover event that they like to do over there. It's going to be The Flash and Supergirl. And I guess Batwoman is also going to be make her appearance in all of this as well before a standalone series is developed for her.
Yeah. And then finally, celebrity real estate. You've been busy.
This has been a very tough week for me and my real estate.
You lost a ton on the Brady Bunch.
My life as a real estate agent on the side because I was representing Lance Bass trying to buy the Brady Bunch house. That got pulled out from underneath me. Those weasels over at HGTV bought the house.
That's who bought the house.
It's the HGTV cable channel. Now, they say that they're going to restore the house to its former 70s glory, both inside and out. So I hope that happens. I think we're going to have, I forget their names. Who are those brothers that...
Property Brothers,
the
right?
Property Brothers.
Yeah, Drew, I don't know their names, Drew Scott, yeah. And I forget the other ones.
Yeah, so, you know, they'll probably, you know, redo the whole thing, even though they weren't even born when the Brady Bunch were on. But Lance Bass, my client Lance Bass, is saying kudos to HGTV. I know you will do the right thing with the house.
There you go.
He's much nicer. I'm super bitter about the whole thing.
So last night was funny. Brian Noonan was talking about it, and he said that Lance Bass should be the host of the show.
Yeah, there you go.
Just to, you know, help him out.
That's great. That's a great idea.
Yeah, that would be nice. And what was, what does his real estate agent get out of that?
Yeah.
Nothing. Not a dime. So I'm still super bitter about the whole thing.
Yeah, I can tell.
But I've got a new listing, though, that you might be interested in. You all know Jackie Gleason, right?
Sure, yeah.
Ralph Cramden, The Honeymooners, Jackie Gleason Show. At one time, he was about as big as they come, and on TV, radio, stage, name it. And in the mid-1950s, as part of his deal with CBS, they not only paid him a salary and royalties, but they gave him 6 acres of land just outside of Peekskill, New York. They gave him this because they knew that he was fanatic about UFOs. And he built a house and a series of little guest houses and things like that, all to resemble spaceships. So when UFOs would land, they would see this familiar real estate and want to, you know, interact with Ralph Cramden. Hey, Norton, look, there's a spaceship.
How much do they want for it?
Well, they're asking $12 million for it.
That's not so bad.
Right now, but it's a round house that's called the Mothership. That's what Jackie Gleason called it. It's got two other little guest houses, two swimming pools, and a huge library, apparently, on UFOs and parapsychology.
Okay. I usually...
And the paranormal.
I usually don't have cash. I'm more of a Venmo guy, but for some reason, I have $75,000 in cash with me, on me right now.
I think that's a good faith offer.
That's a good start. That's a good faith.
Yeah.
Dave, do you have any cash on you?
Yeah, I actually do. I have $76.
Oh, he's walking around somewhere with some lettuce today.
Yeah, I have a $20 bill. So.
There we go. I think that's enough.
You know, oddly enough, that's exactly the same down payment that Lance Bass put on the Brady Bunch house. So we'll see what happens with that Jackie Gleason's UFO house.
All right, we'll get an update on that. Dean, thanks, buddy.
Have a good day, guys.
There you go. Dean Richards, more on entertainment here on the Steve Cochran Show. Interesting stuff today. All right, coming up, Representative Mike Quigley is going to join us in studio. Stay with us.
Glenn Hall makes a nice save. Goes out to the point. A long shot. And Glenn Hall makes another save. 10 seconds left to play. And the Prairie Hillman with a puck in his own corner. And 1 second left to play. And there goes the siren to end the game. And the Blackhawks are the world champion and the Stanley Cup winner for the 1960-61 season.
It was something that I the first thing I did was I looked back when we won the cup, and the captain hoisted over his head and off he went. Now the rest of us didn't know what to do because we had never seen one, so we kind of followed him around. And
great stories all morning long here at 720 WGN about the great Stan Mikita. Of course, passed away at the age of 78. 312-981-7200. If you have stories, we're still getting great texts. 847, similar to Eddie O's story, Stan was on his way to the mezzanine washroom. Must have been near the Blackhawks box back in the 90s. My son of 10 or 11 was in the seats. When I saw Stan, I said, "Don't move. I want my son to meet you." And Stan waited while I ran to get my son. And we still talk about how gracious it was as he actually delayed his pit stop to meet my 11-year-old. A lot of stories like that. In studio with us now, Congressman Mike Quigley represents the 5th District, also known as a huge diehard Blackhawks fan. Good morning. Thanks for being here. Before we get to the conversation about the news of the day, your thoughts on Stan Mikita's passing?
Yeah,
my memories this morning of my mom sewing the numbers 21 on my red Blackhawk jersey, and I just wore the thing out. Obviously, Bobby Hull was the Blackhawk that everyone talked about, but Stan wasn't the biggest guy in the league. He's one of the smallest, but he was certainly one of the toughest, and he wins scoring titles with and without a helmet, right? And this is a guy who came into the league as a tough guy. He acted like an enforcer. And I remember him saying that his kid said, "How are you going to score goals from the penalty box?" And he sort of changed his ways. My memories also are of watching the Ray Rayner highlights. WGN in the morning, Ray Rayner always, he gave us the Blackhawk highlights. And you'd watch the scooter line with Moans and Kenny Warham, and they were magicians. It was like three Pat Canes out there, and gosh, it was fun. And I said to my parents, "I want to play hockey." So that's what I owe Stan Mikita.
There you go. And you're kind of playing hockey.
I'll still play politics.
Well,
we're still out at the Blackhawks practice facility every Saturday morning with Mitch Kane and the gang of a bunch of people who have many surgeries in them playing hockey, but we still love the game. I'd say everybody out there has great memories of growing up with Stan Mikita.
Congressman Quigley, let's talk about some of the news that's coming out of Washington. All eyes seem to be, of course, on the special election that was in Ohio, but there's also the trial of Paul Manafort, who was a former chief of staff of the president. You know, a lot of people who are supporting the president who might get on television say, this is about Paul Manafort and what he did in the past. This has nothing to do with the president. There's a lot, much ado about nothing. What's your take on this? Why does Paul Manafort matter?
Well, I would remind them that Paul Manafort was his campaign chairman, and as campaign chairman, his assistant was Mr. Gates, who is currently testifying against Mr. Manafort about the laws that they broke. So currently, as we speak, the president's former national security advisor, his campaign chairman, one has pled guilty and is cooperating, one is on trial. And oh, by the way, his personal attorney, who ties his personal finances, campaign finances, private life, and financial world together with Russian connections, is in the process, in my mind, of about to flip and cooperate like many others have. So it's not a bright and shiny day. The fact is, a lot of these trials take place in a silo involving criminal misdeeds, but this is a web of deceit over a long period of time. A lot of the president's associates were swimming in the same cesspool of money laundering. Let's remember, the president got most of his financing in the last decade or so of his business world through Deutsche Bank, who is fined $600 million for illegally laundering money with the Russians. So it's just one element of this process with many ties toward Cyprus and money laundering. We know the Russians launder money there. I was in Cyprus in this investigation a year ago. I tell people I went there for a reason. Bottom line, I'm not going to jump to any conclusions. Let the investigation take its course. It's wrong for me to assume guilt, just as much as it's very wrong for those who want to shut the investigation down before Mr. Mueller has a chance to dig into all these details.
Congressman Mike Quigley, my guest here on the Steve Cochran Show this morning in studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
Congressman Mike Quigley in studio here at 720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show, 312-981-7200. We're continuing our conversation talking about some of the political issues. You know, do you run the risk of, and we were talking about this yesterday with Ryan Nobles from CNN. Do you run the risk of being completely, I don't know, wrong in the way that the media has just run to a special election in suburban Columbus, Ohio? I'm not sure if this is a bellwether or gives us an indication of what's next, but are we right to look at some of these elections that are happening now and using them to foreshadow or predict the future?
To an extent, but I do remind people that every district is different because the candidates are different, right? I do think there are national trends that affect local congressional elections, but that can often be overshadowed by other variables. How strong candidate do you have on each side? So I tell people, there's no such thing as a wave. You've got to fight each district. Because if you assume the wave's going to carry you, you're not going to win.
And back to the Russia investigation, how... It's such an interesting. I have a lot of people who will text in and a guest that'll be on the program, and you hear this all the time. There's this idea of a witch hunt, that what we're seeing play out from the Department of Justice is a witch hunting. The president actually tweets that phrase out a lot. And you have been in Congress for up to a decade now, or coming up on a decade, and you have seen investigations. And I think of Benghazi. I think of Hillary Clinton's emails investigations. How much of this Russia investigation is in that same light? How, if you're on the right, do you have a point to say it's a witch hunt?
Well, I was appointed to the House Select Committee on Intelligence 3 years ago, so I've watched the intelligence community operate. There's never 100% certainty, but when it comes to what the Russians did and the fact that they attacked our democratic process to help the Trump campaign and hurt the Clinton campaign, all 17 agencies agreed with a high level of certainty. I just rarely do you see that sort of thing. I think the second thing I would tell folks is you should care just as much about what the Russians did as if you're a Republican or a Democrat. Let's remember the first state that was hacked was the Illinois State Board of Elections database. They hacked as many as 40 others, and this matters. They're attacking the democratic process. So we can argue ourselves, but to allow an adversary to influence that process, it just can't be tolerated. I think most Republicans agree with that. I also imagine many scenarios, as I think your listeners can, in which the Russians would favor a Democrat over a Republican. Think of a presidential race where the Republican is seen as a big military hawk that would, in the Russians' mind, imperil them. So you ought to care just as much about this. There's a lot of certainty here. The man leading this investigation had extraordinary bipartisan qualifications, Mr. Mueller. When he came in, Newt Gingrich and the gang were saying how great he was. You know, a war hero, again, with impeccable credentials and qualifications. I just asked him, let him do his work. If he doesn't come out with anything, then you have been proven right.
All right, I want to talk about the dust up with Canada and Saudi Arabia. This is something we were talking about on the show yesterday, and it still is a head scratcher to me. The Canadian government wants the Saudis to release some human rights activists. The Saudis have responded by saying no and kicking ambassadors out of the country. And the United States and the State Department have said they're not going to take a side. And it seems to me that everything that Canada is asking for falls into line with American principles and what we stand for as a country. Why is the State Department not taking a side in this issue?
It's interesting. The Saudis typically had a very slow-go foreign policy approach to such things. They were very calm and tentative. They'd react, but they took their time. This is a different story, and I suspect that they probably think, well, we can send a message through Canada because it's not that great a loss. To your point, if the United States led a group of Western allies to, as in unity, responded to the Saudis to say this isn't acceptable behavior and we think the Canadians were right, the Saudis would have no choice but to respond favorably.
But that's not happening.
It's not happening. I can't fully understand the Trump administration's foreign policy on a number of counts. This is just one example. I fully understand just how critical the Saudis are to us from a military point of view. But allies have to work together, and sometimes they have to step up when it's right.
The last question I'll ask is just about immigration policy. We've seen a lot in the last week about separation of families and trying to live up to the court order to get the families back together. You just were toured a detention facility. Respond, if you will, quickly. We're running out of time here. Just about where we are with this story and what needs to change.
Yeah, I think sadly for these families, it's too late. But they've already, I think the Trump administration acknowledged that they've already deported many of these parents. I don't know that we'll ever put these families back together. And policy has to end. I hear people say that's not who we are. But traveling the world, I'll tell you, that's who we are to the rest of the world right now. We're the family that builds walls. We are the country that builds walls, tears families apart, and bans Muslims. That does not help us. Not only is it the wrong thing to do, I think it makes us less safe. We are always safer post-World War II in the New World Order when we worked closely with our allies and they respected us. They shared intelligence with us. We could trust them. They fought alongside us in major conflicts. I'm afraid we're losing that and we're losing their trust.
Congressman Mike Quigley, the 5th District, Democrat from Chicago and represents the western suburbs. Congressman Quigley, thanks for joining us in our new studio. Appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's beautiful here.
All right, coming up, we have 9 o'clock hour. We're joined with CLTV. Steve Dale is going to be here as well as Ro Khan. We continue here on Steve Cochran Show, so stay with us.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 720 WGN.
I love my dog. He's my dog.
In for Steve Cochran. Stepping up for Steve, who will be back on Friday. Justin Kaufman here, Dave Ennett, Mary Sandberg, Mary Vanderbilt, Steve Grzanich. And in studio with us, this is very exciting to have Steve Dale in a
good morning.
Say, Steve,
is this the big table?
This is not
finally
the big table.
Oh no,
this is Steve. This is the big, this is the big time.
Yeah, it is
big time. Good to see you.
It truly is. It is good to see you. And this is the first, this is now official. It is the first time since we've switched studios that we are adopting out a dog.
This is an awesome segment that Steve has done for years. I mean, what the and the rate of adoption.
It's amazing.
It's amazing.
I mean, it was not easy to convince the powers that be on radio we're going to adopt a dog, and they'd say, yeah, we're on radio, you know. This isn't, this is radio. Well, it turns out now we're on CLTV.
Right, right.
But when I first began all this, it was only radio. It didn't matter. We've done like 18 in a row, Mary.
Well, yeah, and they've been successful, but you're leaving off the one key component.
Which is?
Mr. Dave Ennett.
Yes. So we walk into the studio and I thought, okay, we've got to have Dave Ennett roll on the floor with the dog, because if that doesn't happen, the dog does not get adopted out.
Well, I tried to roll on the floor with the dog, but she wasn't all that interested.
Well, you were rolling on the floor. That's good enough for me.
It was great to just watch Dave roll on the floor. There's no doubt. Well, let's introduce Chicago Canine Rescue Board member Becky Tamala, who is with our special guest today. Becky, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
All right. So let's introduce our miniature pincher who goes by the name of Jade. Hi, Jade.
Hi, good morning. This is Jade. She's a 10-year-old owner surrender.
10 years old?
Yes.
So they had this dog. You're not supposed to be judgmental when you do what I do, but I'm about to be. They had this dog for 10 years, and then on a Wednesday or whatever it was, say, we don't have time anymore for this dog. I mean, who does that?
Oof.
Yeah, I know.
Right. Probably, though, it'll work out for Jade, because Jade will find a family that wants to give it all the time they can.
Yes.
So, but that is would to be difficult. And Jade is wearing a bandana, just for people listening that can't see.
A red bandana that says Chicago Canine Rescue.
Collar,
so miniature pinschers kind of look like little, very small Dobermans that were accidentally got into the dryer and shrunk. and this is not at all related to a Doberman, actually.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
They're not at all related.
I would think that they would be related.
Yeah, not at all. But that's kind of what they look like. Is this kind of a reddish, ruddy brown? I don't know what you call the color.
I'd say that it's auburn.
Yeah, auburn's a good word.
Leave it to
someone who knows that stuff. What do we know about the miniature pincher?
Mini pins were bred to essentially sit on laps and to accompany people wherever they go. And in fact, that's been the day today for Jade. Jade's been everywhere in Chicago.
Yeah, Jade's been, I picked her up from the shelter at about 6 a.m. this morning. She rode with me to my office. We checked some emails, and we hopped in a cab and came over here. So,
oh, they did the architecture's tour. They did the boat tour. They stopped at a beer garden. They were busy.
The things you do with a mini pin.
And Jade is sitting on your lap. She's been sitting here for the whole interview. She seems quite comfortable.
She's crate trained, too. She could travel in a carrier very happily, which not all, even small dogs, are trained to the crate. They may fit in it, but they may not be happy about being in it, and Jade doesn't care.
And we've talked about this before, Steve, but the concept of adopting a dog that is in its middle age, if you will, is different. A lot of, you see this with cats as well, that there's going to be more of an interest in maybe a kitten or a puppy.
Sure.
But in this case, when you're talking about mini pins and, you know, temperament is okay, and obviously the dog is size-wise is still in that. I mean, do you still run into the same issues of sure. trying to get a middle-aged dog to be adopted as opposed to a baby?
In fact, one of Chicago Canine Rescue's missions right now is to adopt out older dogs and adopt out dogs that are rescued from even before they go into animal care and control, which Becky can explain in a moment. Jade is 10, so for a miniature pincher, while that sounds older, these guys can live without a problem to 16, 17, 18 years. They're one of the more long-lived breeds, I'd say, right up there with the Schipperke and the Chihuahua.
Well, because that's one of the things, when you adopt an older one, you fall in love with it, and you know that, not that any puppy's guaranteed to last longer, but
you
might only get a couple years, but they're quality.
And all Jade needs is love, and Jade isn't too much of a challenge, I don't believe, to deal
no.
with.
No, it doesn't seem like it.
Now, I have
She just snuggled in. You know, Jade just snuggled in.
She's just a lover. The things we do know about her, we're not quite sure if she hasn't been cat tested yet. She is dog and children friendly, and literally she's been laying in my arms cuddling all day. She still has energy, not as much energy as a puppy, so it's really great for...
Maybe senior.
Yeah, even a senior, that'd be perfect. She's little, she's easy to bring around, she could go anywhere with you, but she definitely loves to play and snuggle, so she's definitely not she doesn't act like a senior, but she has a really awesome temperament.
How do you cat test them? Is it just as simple as it sounds?
No, because if you do that, you'll actually get scratched in case the cat is scared. So you want to make sure the dog and the cat are comfortable. And sometimes you do have the dog and or the cat in cages when they're meeting, and slowly introduce them to each other so nobody gets injured, especially the handler and the dog and cat. We want to make sure everyone's safe.
Steve, you said you had a surprise. What's the surprise?
Yes, thank you. So one of the big fans of WGN Radio, actually, and you... And it turns out he gets up in the morning. I didn't know this until about a year ago. He gets up in the morning on Sunday morning at 6:30 to listen to me is Doc Emmerich.
Oh, that's great.
Oh, yeah.
Love
and,
Doc.
And I can hardly, even if I'm filling in for someone here, I can hardly do radio without a text from Doc Emmerich. I don't even know how he finds out that I'm on.
Isn't that amazing?
Even if it's last minute, you know. So he's a huge WGN fan. More important to me, he's a huge animal lover. And he said, and he's done this before, he said, how many dogs would, let's say it's $1,200, could we adopt out like four dogs? I said, that's exactly right. We could adopt out four dogs from Chicago Canine Rescue. He let me choose the shelter. Chicago Canine Rescue bends over backwards and more to help animals others might not be able to help. So dogs with heartworm, older dogs, for example, they will treat dogs. This dog didn't need any medical treatment, but you will treat medical treatment if necessary. And when you do that enough, you kind of run out of money. So this is not the best year financially. So here is a check from Doc Emmerich.
Ooh.
Oh, wow.
For $1,200 to adopt out four dogs. Now, I recommend, and you're a huge hockey fan, and I think you happen to be a hockey fan.
Yes.
Yes. That's an understatement. And Mary is. Everyone here is a Blackhawk fan. So I think one dog should be named Doc.
Mm-hmm.
I think, what do you guys think? Another dog should be named
Stan Makita.
I think Stan. I was going to say Stan.
Yeah. Stash. Yeah. I think Stash.
Stash.
Would be,
better.
There you go.
Better. Yeah. Perfect timing for that. How about two others? Because we're going to adopt out four.
Okay.
I love Stash. That's
Stash
so
is awesome.
Nice.
Yeah. That's great.
How about Jay?
Sure.
Yeah, why not?
And I think, you know, I think a dog could be called Taves.
Sure.
I was going to go Taser and Caner.
Taser and Caner. All right.
That's why Dave's on the Walk of Fame right there. Yeah. He comes up with the dog names. He knows what's up.
Well, Mary did too.
I did
the Walk of Fame.
Yeah,
the Walk of Fame next year, Mary.
And Doc Emmerich, he's recovering from surgery right now.
You're right.
So he's probably hanging out, listening.
Well, thank you, Doc. That's awesome.
Isn't that nice?
So,
and an autographed photo of Doc Emmerich for everyone who adopts out any of those dogs.
Oh, that's great.
And that is so nice.
Thank you, Doc.
So what has to happen here? If someone is listening right now and saying that everything about Jade is what they want in a dog, what's the next steps?
And the next step would be?
The next steps are visit our website, chicagocaninerescue.org. We have an online application. You will need to fill out the application and be approved prior to adoption, but the process is pretty short. So just make sure you go on our website, visit our website, and fill out an application.
There you go. So the website, again, one more time?
chicagocaninerescue.org.
And what happened with Jade? We have 1 minute. So what happened with Jade is that these people brought Jade in. They're walking into animal care and control with Jade. Dogs rarely or cats walking themselves. So the people are walking in, and there's this group that literally sits outside the door. CRISP is the acronym for what they are. And what they do, if they can, is they intervene so the animal, dog or cat, doesn't even necessarily need to go in those doors of animal control. And they say, okay, you need financial resources. We've got a fund here, maybe, for financial. Oh, the dog is jumping too much. We know a behaviorist or a behavior trainer who can help that dog. Or the cat is missing the litter box too many times. It may be medical. We can help. Right. And what they do is they do exactly that. Or they say there's a rescue organization for that dog and we can, and it turns out to be Chicago Canine Rescue said, you know what? This dog doesn't even have to go through the doors. This dog is so amazingly good. Let's just bring this dog over to Chicago Canine Rescue.
All right. Well, the dog's name is Jade. Available for adoption. Steve Dale can be heard. Steve Dale's Pet World, 6:30 a.m. Sunday mornings.
In the a.m.
In the a.m. Yes. And Becky Tamala is the board member at Chicago Canine Rescue. Great to meet you, and great to see you, Steve.
Thank you,
Justin. Great to meet you, Jade. And I think now we take a break so Dave can roll around.
I'll try again. I get Jade to roll around a little bit.
That's okay. We just enjoy seeing Dave roll around.
I think Jade wants to snuggle with Dave.
There it is. Yeah, oh, maybe a snuggle on the floor. That would work.
Look at the little things that we look for in a hockey uniform or sticks or skates. They're on. I've never been called beautiful, but I'm going to call myself beautiful.
WGN. Stan Mikita talking about the statue outside of the United Center. Of course, today we honor the legend, Stan Mikita, who passed away at the age of 78. Great conversations today. You can find it all at WGNradio.com. Another big day, you know, as Dave mentioned, the sportscast as well. Today is August 8th, 2018. That's 30 years ago that lights were put in place, Wrigley Field. Very big day in Chicago history. Rain out, of course. We all remember Greg Maddux and the company sliding around. Pete Zimmerman has jumped on mic. Dave Ennett as well. Pete, you have story. What's your memory of Lights Day?
I don't really have a specific memory of that day, but I knew this was happening. So for the show, I was like, oh, maybe for the MVP, I'm going to try to get a Cub player. So I reached out to the Cubs for like Ryne Sandberg or Andre Dawson.
Yeah.
Wasn't getting anywhere. And then I have a source who's friends with maybe a Mark Grace or a Bill Murray.
Ooh.
So I was like, hey.
A source that Dave knows.
So I was like, I
love the sources.
Let me see if we can get a Bill Murray to a surprise call, because he helped with the broadcast and Harry Carey. So he was like, oh, let me check. And then he comes back to me and says, you know, what about John Fogerty? And I was like, John Fogerty, the lead singer of Creedence Clearwater
Revival?
Yeah, in center field. And I was like, man, you know, not really the one guy I was looking for.
Yeah.
And I was, that's what I asked. So I'm like, was John Fogerty there? And he's like, oh, yeah, spent the summer with him. He married a Cub fan. And me and my source and John Fogerty and Spike Odell spent a wild summer together in 1988. So if you want Fogerty to talk about the Cubs.
I
want
to hear. We're going to have to have Spike Odell on to corroborate that story of this wild summer.
Yeah, I want
to
hear all about the wild summer.
With our source. And
it was a wild summer.
My memory of that night is my dad complaining because he didn't want there to be night games at Wrigley. So leading up to that was a negative pitch at a Sandberg House.
I think we're anti-lights as well. My dad grew up next to Wrigley Field, so I think we had the placard that said no lights. And we didn't live there at the time. I lived in Wonder Lake. But so no Fogerty?
So no Fogerty. No,
so
then I went.
You made the call on that? You said, I'm not interested in the lead singer of Creedence Clearwater? What are you talking about?
Well, I followed up, and it turns out Fogerty was on vacation this week.
That is such, if you knew our source, that is our source to a T. pitching something like, that can't
this.
Happen.
No, I can't.
Yeah, right. No.
But that's great.
I was like, at least get me an Al Nipper.
Dave, what do you remember from that night? Were you there?
I was there.
Yeah.
And actually had been there, I don't know if it was the night before or a few nights earlier, there was a preview. And the Cubs, I think it was mainly a media event where they turned on the lights and let everybody see how it would look. But that night, actually, I had become a father like a few days earlier. So my wife is at home with our newborn.
Lindsay,
who just had her 30th birthday, of
wow,
course.
That's great.
And so I was going to work just that game. And then I was going to take the rest of the week off so I could be around. So I go out there, of course, sitting there at Wrigley Field, and the skies open up.
Rain, right?
After, who was it, Phil Bradley hit the home run for the Phillies off Sutcliffe, and then the Cubs had the lead, and the rains came, and the guys are all sliding, Greg Maddux and company sliding on the tarp, and then the game was called, and they never played it, and I had already taken the next night off, so I was not there on 8/9/88.
And that's why we remember 8/8/88,
yeah.
Because we all because Dave was there. The 9th, we won't even yeah. talk about
even,
it tomorrow.
Because they had T-shirts and stuff for the 8/8/88,
yeah, right.
But nothing for 8/9.
I was not able to negotiate two nights off that
that's
week.
Right.
You, Dave, was pioneering paternity leave back then, too.
Yeah,
not
great.
Every dad stayed home. That's nice that you took some time to hang out with Lindsay.
There you go.
You know, I was not there as well, but I have the little memento. It's like the glass little plaque that says first night game. I have no idea how I got it, but it's in my Cubs bathroom.
There you go. And you know what? Tomorrow, Greg Flamm and Swap Meet will be on. We'll obviously talk about Stan Mikita memorabilia, but we also have to talk. Every time people call up, we talk about it. They have the placards or the commemorative glass mirrors and things like that about the lights at Wrigley Field. So we'll do more tomorrow, of course, with the Swap Meet. All right, we'll take a quick break here. Come back. Ro Khan's going to join us after the news, so stay with us.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
You know what? Our sources came through and found someone who was at both games, the 8th and the 9th, and his name is Steve Burt. Oh, I was not supposed to give away the name.
Oh, it was going
to
be a quiz. Yeah, I was covering the 8th, so I was in there and then killing time during the rain delay up in the booth. And then the 9th, it was easy to get tickets. So I got tickets for my whole family.
You were just killing time in the booth?
Well, so the rain went on for quite a while, you know, and they tried to get the game in. So I was up there, and Harry Carey was in the radio booth, Chuck Swirsky at the time. And it's funny, Mike Quigley was here because I met Mike in the 80s when he worked for Alderman Bernie Hansen. Because
right.
I did a lot of work with the opponents of lights at Wrigley Field. So I'd been covering them. So I was in the booth with Harry and during the rain. And I said, you know, there are a lot of people in this neighborhood really happy to see it raining right now. And he turned and looked at me like, get that out of my booth.
They did feel like the universe was telling them, hey.
Oh, they were really encouraged by that, yeah.
He's a holy cow. Get out of the booth.
I'll tell you, I never saw a guy turn and give a glare like he turned and gave me a glare.
Maybe that's where Steve Bertrand learned his glare.
No.
I don't have a glare.
No glare. That's great, Steve. Thanks for sharing that story. Coming up, Ro Khan.
As his penalty minutes decreased, his point total rose. In 1966-67, he became the first player to capture 3 major awards in a season. The Art Ross Trophy for scoring, the Hart Trophy as MVP, and the Lady Byng for his gentlemanly play. Astonishingly, he repeated the feat the following year. In total, Mikita won 4 scoring titles, remains the Blackhawks' all-time leader in points, assists, and games played.
720 WGN, Steve Cochran Show, stepping up for Steve today. Justin Kaufman here. Dave's here. Mary's here. Steve's here. Ro Khan is here. Ro, upset that Steve's not here. I can understand that.
I said to Mary, the executive producer of the Steve Cochran Show, I was told that Mr. Cochran was going to be here when I arrived.
And that there would be snacks.
Right. And it's sort of like when you go to the doctor's office, well, Dr. Fabitz can't see you.
But we have this associate.
But Dr. Kalahari can.
I'm Dr. Kalahari.
And Dr. Kalahari, she's brand new, but right. She's really good. We really like her. And I'm like, wait a second. She's going to see everything.
Yeah, and she's going to bring in a team of fellows.
Go ahead.
They're going to watch it as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead and turn your head and cough.
I did have that happen, yeah, actually, at a skin doctor a couple of weeks ago, where it was like, the regular guy was off, and, you know, I was like, I had a rash. What are you supposed to do with a rash?
I don't know.
Wouldn't go away. It was on my ankle. I was like, did I have a thing? Did I get a deal? I didn't know quite what it was, but it was there for like a month. So I go in and, it was like, yes, Dr. Verbeets, well, I can't see you. I'm sorry. Very busy. I'm thinking, he's got what does he have? It's a magnifying glass. How busy could he possibly be? And then they bring in the most, astoundingly beautiful woman I have ever seen in my life, who's, hello, I'm Dr. Kalahari, and I will be looking at your entire body today. I'm like, no, you will not. No, you will not.
Plus, you're in there for a rash. Right. That sounds like kind of a not a very masculine injury.
No, it's a, name one I've had that is. And I reached down to my ankle, and I'm like, and she goes, well, you can undress. I go, no, you know what? I'm tight on time. Can we just, and I'm literally just pulling up the pant leg, just to the ankle bone. That's all I want her to see. Because I think I got kind of a sexy ankle bone.
When I went I had my first colonoscopy. And the checkup before that started, it was the doctor comes in and he's like, I'd like to introduce a couple interns. And it was two or three 22-year-old girls, women. And I'm like, they're like, so just turn over to your side.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, that's ankle. What are you talking about, ankle?
I know. Well,
wait
a second, though. But they hit you with that special sauce immediately.
Yeah.
And then next thing you know, you're waking up with checks dripping out of your mouth.
8888. What's it mean to you?
It's interesting. That's my mom. Today is my mom's birthday.
Oh, happy birthday, Mrs. Khan.
And she is. She that year was the year my daughter was just born.
Oh, just like Dave, yeah.
A couple weeks prior, and we were all going out to dinner with my mom on her birthday, and it was a very dramatic, drama-filled evening because I just got married and just had a baby, and there was a little bit of stress in the room. There was you get your girlfriend pregnant kind of thing going on, and so we had dinner actually across.
That's really chic now to get your girlfriend pregnant.
30 years
babies.
Ago, yeah. Less chic then. Right. And then also explaining to your mom, hey, by the way, I'm going to need a little bit of a loan because I'm just out of college and I don't have any money. And she's like, no, you can do this on your own. And I did, which now I never speak to her again. But the, and this, her birthday present is me just saying happy birthday on the radio.
Yeah, right.
So we went to the hotel across the street. Just was the, was just built. And the
Are you
Fairmont,
pointing to the Fairmont?
The Fairmont. Okay,
yeah.
And we were, and I was like, I want to see this game. All I want to see is what does Wrigley Field look like at night?
Right.
Right? So I kept
sneaking
away from the dinner with my mom and my new wife.
Can I get a loan? One second.
With a new baby.
holding a little, like a baby that's making like a little noise, like little babies do. And then, like 3 weeks later, they're like bellowing like an alarm. And I'm like, excuse me one second. I came back, where are you going? I'm not going anywhere. So I would go to the bar and I would stare at this. And then I was the happiest guy alive that night because there was a huge storm and it got rained out.
Right. There you go. That's a good story. There you go. All right, let's do this.
The opposite of Dave Ennett. Dave Ennett got married without getting his wife pregnant and then had his daughter.
A
week off of work to be with the baby and wife, and Rose sneaking away for a game.
Parenthood comes in
it's different for everybody.
Different forms, right?
Yeah.
Rokan here. You can hear him, of course, the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis every day, 3 to 7.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
All right, it's the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman here on 720 WGN and CLTV. Rokan in the building. You can check him out today at 3. What are you guys going to talk about? Paul Manafort trial.
Yeah.
Wrapping up here, or at least get the Gates.
The Gates part is wrapping up. Probably the Manafort trial goes another 3 or 4 court days, and then that's over. It'll be interesting. I mean, Paul Manafort had a really good day yesterday. There was a bit of a surprise in the Rick Gates cross-examination. So there were two Rick Gates, weren't there, sir? It was a very dramatic moment.
It
turns out he was having an affair and he was using the money he was stealing from Manafort to fund the affair and he was living
in London.
So
that was a question Justin and I had. If he wasn't using that money to steal that he stole for the affair? Would the affair even be on the table as a...
No, they couldn't. They wouldn't be able to bring it in if that weren't the case.
Because but the headlines, that's what I was saying. The headlines in the media right now are, the prosecution brings up, or defense brings up affair, but it doesn't mention, unless you read down, that it has to do with the money that was being laundered to use on the affair.
Right. Okay, here's my thought, though. Really, an affair is an issue now in this? Oh, well, he had an affair.
Yeah.
Well, then, this Paul Manafort complaint. Look at what an upstanding man he is.
Right.
I mean, the minute we saw Paul Manafort walk in to onto the scene, he reminded me of that actor that played Carla's husband on Cheers, you know, sort of hunched over, super hairy, and he always looked like he was up to no good.
Yeah.
You know, it was like he had that look on his face, and you're like, and they would ask him questions like, when exactly is the convention? I don't know, I can't really. And he's smoking a cigarette. No, I can't.
I couldn't tell you.
No, I don't really know. Why are you asking me all these questions? I don't have to answer that. You know, he had always like this super defensive guy.
But he did have a good day yesterday. I mean, it's.
So, I mean, it depends on what the jury comes back here with. It's pretty clear that he was running pretty big game here, and that he was busted broke when he ended up at the Trump campaign. And what did he want from that? What are they trying to tell us with this trial? Where is this heading? Obviously, you got a paper tax case and all that, fine. But that's garden variety. Is there something that's going to come out of this that's going to lead to a motive for him to try to use his position with the Trump organization or Trump campaign to wire in, bad actors into our government?
The other big news today that it's possible that Rudy Giuliani is going to put forth a proposal on the parameters for a Robert Mueller interview with the president. What to make of this? This has been such a weird dance where the president has come out several times saying, I'll do it. I'll sit down with anybody. I'll talk about anything. And yet, and several different lawyers giving us several different ways that it either could happen or not. Is this something that we're going to see? Is Bob Mueller going to interview the president?
I don't know why people believe everything Donald Trump says. When Donald Trump goes, oh, of course I want to sit down.
Yeah, right.
Right?
That's a caveat, but my lawyers,
No, he doesn't. And it's not like, and then people are like, well, he really just wants to tell the truth because he believes that he can get away with all of this. No, he doesn't. He wants to say it so that he is never accused of running away from it when he actually does have to run away from it.
We were talking to Quigley about this a little bit too, and I was just, someone brought this, I might have been a texter, I forgot, someone brought up the idea that if you could, you'd love to see politicos live in each other's shoes, because when, let's say Benghazi was a good example in Congress, the left couldn't, they were rolling their eyes at how much of a witch hunt this was. I mean, I think it was Hillary Clinton herself at one point, even with the emails, and got up on this in front of Congress and rolled her eyes. It became a meme. Mm-hmm. But there was this idea that everything that was happening on the right was done for political reasons, and the left thought it was a witch hunt. And here we are with the Russia investigation completely flipped.
Right.
Is there any thought that way, that this is, in the category of a Benghazi? If you're someone on the left, you think it's much different?
No, totally different. I mean, Benghazi, when Benghazi happened, in those first weeks thereafter, even the guys at Fox News who ended up, sort of pounding the desk for it, got that what was going on there is that the reason that they kept those military personnel behind, or paramilitary personnel to protect this one annex and not go to the main building, was because there was something going on in that annex that the government didn't want disclosed.
So once they figured that out, they all backed off of it, right?
Well, they didn't, but then they realized that they couldn't really talk about that. So it was a really good opportunity for people to soften up Hillary Clinton. The whole idea is everybody knew Hillary Clinton was running for president, and so it was a really good opportunity to soften her up by going after this and talking about the State Department, the weaknesses of the State Department, and what were they actually doing, and why the Obama administration was militarily weak and they weren't strategic about what they were doing, and it was just a way to exercise all of those beliefs and thoughts so that you could put them out on display for people. There wasn't, remember, there were no indictments that came out of the Benghazi thing. There, nothing came from it. Right. After the Republicans ran the whole thing, and they had Congress, they could have done whatever they wanted. And now, and in the aftermath, after Donald Trump became president, they could have let indictments if they wanted to. There was nobody to indict. This is very different.
There you go. More of this conversation with Ro Khan, the Ro Khan Show with Anna DeVellante, is coming up this afternoon, 3 to 7, here on WGN. Ro, always a pleasure.
Bill. Oh, always it really is, Jason. Good to see you.
She said, the guy with the whistle, he pointed for you to go that way. And in the meantime, Uncle Bobby and Uncle Kenny and Uncle Ab were all going to sit with their friends. And you had to go sit all the way across that ice by yourself. How do you explain to a 5-year-old that you have just sinned?
A great day of memories and tribute to Stan Mikita, the legend who died yesterday at the age of 78. Tremendous, though. The so many great texters and people who text in who had something to say about how Stan Mikita affected their lives. Also, the guests that are on today. A tremendous day honoring one of the greats, and he will be sorely missed. Bill and Wendy up next here on 720 WGN. Hey, guys. How you doing?
Justin, how are you?
I'm good.
Good morning.
How are you guys? Where were you? 8888. It's the 30-year anniversary of 8888, the lights at Wrigley Field.
Yeah, I remember not wanting to go to the game. I'm a Sox fan.
Ah, there you go. Did you have to go? Did you not go?
I did not go.
Yeah.
It rained, so no one went, right?
Yeah, right, right.
I do remember the date.
I was shooting Major League in Milwaukee, and I
Bragger.
Knew that they wouldn't show it on television. Because it's Milwaukee.
Right.
So my plan was to get in the car and to drive home and either listen to the game on the radio or watch it on television when I did get home.
Right.
But the more the rain came down, the more I realized I'm wasting a trip here. Yeah.
And first off, the movie Major League, which you are a big part of, you're
too
star
high.
Of.
Yes.
Okay, but it's about the Cleveland Indians. What are you shooting in Milwaukee?
Because
did they act as if the Cleveland Indian Stadium was Milwaukee?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And the second one was shot in Baltimore because there's union rules which would have said if we shot in Cleveland, we would have had to have paid every extra. But in Milwaukee, they don't have that. And in Baltimore, they don't have that.
They pay them in beer.
They get paid. In beer.
Cheese curd for you. Cheese curd for you.
Everybody gets one.
I mean, it's amazing. That's a good Hollywood story because, and I don't know how you make up for the idea that every time there was a home run, the guy slid down the water slide, and that's
right.
Obviously Milwaukee, not Cleveland.
They went out of their way to make it look, of course, like Cleveland. There's little glitches. There's little things that show up every once in a while.
Right.
There's some sign that says the radio station that would be broadcasting the Indian games, but it's really a Milwaukee radio station. So there's little mistakes.
Right. Put all the Easter eggs.
Yeah, yeah, we'll wait for the book, the Bill Neff book.
Write the book now.
You're writing the book. Yeah. What do you guys got on the show today?
We are going to talk. We have this ethical hacker who's on, and we're going to talk about internet safety because you're getting hacked probably right now. You realize that
you
Justin.
Are Justin. I was hacking you as you were speaking.
It's where we live right now.
Yeah.
2018.
And we're going to talk about the Perseid meteor showers that will be visible here. So
and they're being hacked. So we'll get down to the bottom of that.
Hacking meteors.
Yep.
Ethically hacked.
Ethically hacked.
They're ethically hacked. All right. Have a great show.